Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
As I bump the microphone around to start the show, I'm a professional broadcaster, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. And yes, a little crazy because the whole world is so depressing right now, from COVID to the school situation to what's happening in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm pretty familiar with Kenosha, Wisconsin, having spent 10 years in Milwaukee and also grew up north of, south of Kenosha in Illinois. My sister and brother-in-law met at Carthage College in Kenosha, which is a fine little liberal arts college right along the shores of Lake Michigan. But this is a mess. And now you have more of a mess after last night. Here's something that's really interesting, and I don't know why this is. And we've seen this breakdown this way with the situation with COVID, too. And I'm going to toss this in before I get into some more details, because it's baffling to me. 50%, this is a Rasmussen poll, 50% of likely voters say the police should crack down on the protests to bring them to an end. Seems kind of logical to me, but 38% disagree and believe the protests should be allowed to continue until the protesters decide to end them. Who are those 38%? Well, they're Democrats, we know that, because there is a sharp partisan disagreement. 75% of Republicans and a plurality of unaffiliated voters think the police should crack down on the protests. They think this is, you know, out of control. Mainly they think that because they're using their brain and common sense and they see the video, so they know it's out of control. Just 31% of Democrats agree. 56% of Democrats say the protests should be permitted to continue until the protesters want to end them. So I'm not sure why you would say that, given the level of violence and destruction. On the one hand, you have people with AR-15s that are trying to prevent businesses from being burnt down, and they have done so successfully in Kenosha. On the other hand, you got a 17-year-old kid from Antioch, Illinois, who goes up there. He's carrying his rifle. He's chased down. If you haven't seen the video of this, it's pretty horrific. There's been a lot of horrific videos this week. He's chased down. It looks like. Now, look, I'm just telling you what it looks like, okay? I'm not saying the kid didn't do anything wrong because he killed two people and wounded somebody else. But you could probably make a relatively strong case that if he had not shot those people, that he would be in the ICU right now. I mean, I don't know. He shouldn't have been there probably in the first place. That's why this whole thing is a mess. David Beth, who's the sheriff of Kenosha County up there in Milwaukee, talked about this a little bit today. You know, one thing he got into, and we know this from St. Louis, from Ferguson, this is very organized. I read you a poster yesterday, and Sheriff Beth addressed this this afternoon. Let me see, because I took a screen capture. This is Kenosha, and this was the flyer for this week. F Kenosha PD, F Madison PD, F Milwaukee PD, F Chicago PD. Dave, watch me here, because there's a lot of profanity in here, so I'm trying to do my best to fill it in. No bad protesters, no good cops. Come prepared, wear a mask, bring water. No peace police, do what you want, blank stuff up. Didn't say stuff. And that's what they're trying to do. So the sheriff, David Beth, talked about how he's not really into social media. He doesn't really pay attention to Facebook. But they're using investigators, the detectives, the police. They're trying to use, to their best of their ability, Facebook, Twitter, and things like that to find out where the hotspots are going to be. But these guys are good. Man, BLM and Antifa, they know what they're doing. They're throwing head fakes. So he offered an example. I don't know if we have the audio of this because we have some audio from the sheriff. He offered an example of, you know, a Facebook post that went out and said there's 30 cars here and all this stuff. They showed up. There was nobody there. Nobody there whatsoever. So you're going to hear him crack down here, talk about cracking down tonight. They had a curfew last night at 8 o'clock, and that's when things got crazy. That's what happened in Ferguson. That's what happened in Minneapolis. That's what happens across the country. Here's the sheriff, David Beth, talking about a little bit about what happened last night.
Last night, with the fence up, we were much more assertive in the way we handled things. Shortly after 8 o'clock, the curfew went into effect. At 8 o'clock, we moved out an armored car, and we basically said, you need to leave. Curfew's 8 o'clock. You're in violation of the curfew. If you don't, we will be taken into custody. Some left, several left. We watched on the screen, we watched several leaving. They followed the orders, and then when some didn't come, I don't know if I saw it live, but I don't know if you saw it, they started pelting the officers over the fence with stones and bricks, and the armored car was pelted. There were Molotov cocktails thrown. We gave them probably about another 10, 15 minutes, and then we did tear gas to help disperse the crowd. That was it's not something we wanted to do, but with the damage and the everything that went on Monday night, it was something we had to do. We had to disperse the crowd and get them moving out. The longer we let them go, the longer we let them build, the more dangerous the situation became.
Talked about, we was referring to a fence here at the beginning of the soundbite. They put a fence around the campus of the police station. That was certainly one of the targets. They had $300,000 worth of damage alone just in the night from two nights ago when all this started, and they were trying to protect it. He also talked about protecting the people that were in the jail. There's inmates in that jail, and said, look, if somebody starts a fire in this building, they try to burn the police department down, which they're going to try to do. People are going to die in the jail. So then he outlined the plan for tonight. They're moving up the curfew.
Tonight we're changing the curfew to 7 o'clock. We will gladly support all the peaceful protests that are really throughout Kenosha County up until 7 o'clock. And after that, we asked everybody to go home. Last night, I'm very proud of the people of Kenosha. Last night, when I went to move from this building out to the command post, I drove down the streets and there was no one on it. The people of Kenosha let law enforcement and all our partners do our job. They let us do, truthfully, a much better job last night than we could do on Monday night. And the people stayed home. They moved their cars. They did everything we asked them to. And I want to thank the people of Kenosha for doing that. Tonight we're moving.
Well, yeah, so it's what he's trying to point out here, and he goes on and he explains it's the outside agitators. Look, there's people in, we knew this happened here in Ferguson and after the Stockley situation as well. It is very well protested. It's organized. And let's not be, you know, misunderstood here. The people who organize these things, they want damage, destruction as much as they possibly can. I read from you the quotes from the Black Lives Matter activists from Chicago. They make it very clear. They don't even think that criminals are criminals. They think that the word criminal is made up. It sounds so goofy to even say that. Someone tuning in right now might think I'm crazy. You might think I'm crazy anyway. This is true. This is what the Black Lives Matter leaders think. They really believe this. Now, again, I suppose you have to separate the cause from the organization. I don't know. I don't know that you do, because I'm sick and tired of people using that as an excuse to just shake off the violence and what's happening in our cities. Now, you can say what you want about the cops and what happened here in this situation, and I have to spend a little time on Jacob Blake's mom, because talk about a woman that is as classy as can be, as calm as can be, and the sheriff in Kenosha County talked about this. I mean, I don't know the whole situation. I did this with Ferguson. Those of you who've lived here and listened for a long time, I didn't know from the very beginning 6 years ago what happened. I said, I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach, right? Antonio French didn't do that. Tony Messenger didn't do that. The gang at the Post-Dispatch didn't do that. Everyone's doing the same thing with this. They don't know what happened. We don't even know what happened with this 17-year-old kid last night. Doesn't look good for him. He killed two people, but he was running from other protesters. So they're not going to stop this violence, and it's probably going to move. My guess would be if they think Kenosha's not a good target, they'll move into Racine, or they'll move into Milwaukee, which is not far away. There's going to be an opportunity for the protesters to loot, to destroy, to do whatever they want. They're just going to have to shift their gears, and they know what they're doing at this point. But this is where we're going to be whenever there's a police shooting. It doesn't matter the facts. Now, I'm going to take some time this afternoon on Breonna Taylor. The Louisville Courier-Journal did an outstanding piece this morning, and I want to make something clear here, because I know what I'll be accused of. I'm not trying to make the case that the cops are right in all these situations. With Breonna Taylor in Louisville in particular, I have long, as a libertarian, as a conservative libertarian, been opposed to no-knock warrants. I've been outraged by them in the past, whether someone's targeted who's white or black. It's a law enforcement tool. In this particular case, there was good reason for law enforcement in Louisville to be looking at Breonna Taylor. Nobody wants to talk about that. I will share with you the jailhouse conversations and other things that they determined in the run-up to that incident, which was terrible. She didn't deserve to get killed. There's no doubt about that. But what led up to it, and if you hear the details, she was no innocent either, as far as her involvement in criminal activity, allegedly, as you will see. So these things are very complicated. We know that with Mike Brown. Doesn't matter to the protesters. Doesn't matter to the NBA. You're going to see what you're going to see. And it looks, I get it. I get how it looks horrifying when you see someone shot from behind 7 or 8 times and now they're paralyzed. But what do people say about that? The number, why you have to shoot him 7 or 8 times. Okay, that's fine. But have you ever been in that situation? The other thing is, why didn't they tackle him? I think I might have even said that. Well, guess what? There's a video from the other side of the car that shows that they did tackle him. They tackled him. Then he ran around the car. And they said drop the knife, allegedly. I don't know all the details. Shouldn't we wait just a little bit before burning down more buildings? No, we should not. Because the cops are bad no matter what. And the protesters are good no matter what. Now this, and we'll make the case for this here coming up. For those of you who hate the orange man, okay, and there's many of you listening right now, you can't stand the orange man. Raise your hand if you don't think that this is not the biggest campaign ad for Donald J. Trump. Nobody's raising their hand. You know it is. It's a big, sloppy, wet kiss to Donald Trump. Violent, sloppy, wet kiss. So you want proof of that? Let's listen to Don Lemon right now and what he said last night with Chris Cuomo, because at least he's being honest, I guess. He's not worried about businesses and lives being lost and livelihoods. He's worried about the polls.
The rioting has to stop. Chris, as you know and I know, it's showing up in the polling. Mm-hmm. It's showing up in focus groups. It is the only thing right now that is sticking. And the Democrats tonight stuck with that, right? And they also stuck with the theme that you said. The coronavirus. You got coronavirus and you have Kenosha.
Yep. Well, he's concerned. Don Lemon's concerned. Chris Cuomo's concerned because they know that this actually helps the president. We'll be back. We'll break it down with Josh Krasauer for the National Journal coming up here.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Ah, the Levitt Brothers coming back with that. Thank you, Dave Klein, for the bumper music. 2:23. It is the Mark Reardon Show for a Wednesday afternoon. We have baseball tomorrow, so keep that in mind. A bit of a doubleheader. So we'll be back on Friday with the roundtable. I think we're kind of putting the panel together, and we'll have a newbie. We're going to break in a newbie on this panel on Friday. You can always listen, of course, on the radio.com app, even rewind it up to 24 hours. The podcast is at KMOX.com. You can follow on Twitter at Mark Reardon KMOX, and, of course, on Instagram, which is Mark Talk. We're trying to get Josh Krausner on the line here for a chat, and he's getting to a landline. So I wanted to just a little bit more about Kenosha and Sean King, who is one of the, I guess, one of the biggest rabble rousers to come out of Ferguson and what happened with Mike Brown. I don't even know who the guy was or is. All I know is he's saying things like this. So he's now threatening to name the police officers involved in Jacob Blake's killing if the Kenosha Police Department doesn't release the identity of the officer who did. If you do not release the officer who brutally shot Jacob Blake on Sunday, we will simply begin naming officers from your department who may or may not be him. Blanket, your protection, this guy is, you know, BLM to the core, by the way, just so you know, he's one of the leaders. Your protection of his identity is unethical. What's his name? That's what he wrote to the Kenosha Police Department. And then he went on and he named two names without any, he said, basically, here's one name. He had gotten an indication that there was somebody in protective custody in a hotel because people thought he shot Jacob Blake. So then he named a second officer with no proof that it was the officer that shot Blake as he got into his car. So this is what's going on right now. And if you think things are going to get better tonight in Kenosha, you're going to probably find that they'll get worse somewhere else. And again, we're going to talk a little bit more of these details on the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville, which I think might surprise a lot of people. Just when you hear the background in the context, that's what I'm trying to present this afternoon. Josh Krausner is here from the National Journal as we're in the middle of the Republican National Convention. Josh, I will say this, and I have a bit of an excuse because last week I was really, really sick. I didn't watch a second of the Democratic National Convention. I have kept it consistent this week because I think this whole thing is silly on both sides. I have not watched a minute of the Republican convention, and I do not plan to. That's terrible as a talk show host to admit that, but I have no interest. So at least I'm being honest at least here with you.
Well, you know, you're not, you have a lot, there are a lot of other Americans that aren't tuning in. If you look at the TV ratings, they're lower than any other political convention before it. And look, it's political propaganda. You're seeing both parties trying to put their best face forward, but ultimately it's a 4-day long extended campaign advertisement. So, you know, as political reporters, we love to dissect the rhetoric, look at the stagecraft, you know, try to look at the speakers and scrutinize them. But, you know, these conventions have less and less relevance for your average, you know, swing voter. And certainly I don't expect either candidate to get much of an advantage or disadvantage out of what happens.
So I said something before the break. Want your opinion on this, because I really think what's happening right now in Kenosha and what's happened even in Portland and elsewhere, that's the biggest campaign ad for Donald Trump right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Republicans and Democrats alike that I've talked to in the last couple of weeks have shown the issue of violent crime, rising crime, rioting in certain cities is skyrocketing as an issue in terms of importance. So more with Republicans than Democrats, but, you know, it is an issue that has bipartisan resonance. And there was a Pew Research poll that came out this past week showing that 59% of Americans were very concerned about violent crime, way up from you know, a year ago, and almost as resonant as the coronavirus, which was 63%. So, I mean, this is an issue that and look, I think Trump has his own vulnerabilities. He's president when a lot of this stuff is going on. He spans the flames at sometimes when he talks about issues of race and policing and crime. But what's remarkable watching the Democratic convention, Mark, is that Joe Biden had nothing to say, or any Democratic speaker didn't even acknowledge what's taking place in cities across the country, because they know it divides their own party, and they know they have a very extreme, if you will, left-wing group of activists that would go crazy if any Democratic speaker praised the police or called for a certain degree of law and order in the city. So, I mean, Democrats,
and I think some of this happens,
they're not stressing.
Don't you think some of this happens? Look, the Republicans, there are legitimate issues of race and the treatment of African Americans in this country that need to be discussed, and they need to be highlighted. But what happens is that the Republicans don't want to even give an inch on that, typically. The Democrats don't want to give an inch on the crime. And then we're left with a bunch of people very confused and maybe not protected in the middle. Because I think if you got a a bunch of the most of the country together, they would agree on a lot of these things. But, you know, somebody posted this on Twitter a short time ago, somebody I follow, and said, Twitter, hey, here's a reminder, Twitter is not real life, but Twitter and Facebook is driving a lot of this right now. Social media drives a lot of this.
That's right. That's right. I mean, people will react instinctively. And look, it's not a zero-sum game. You can be for, you know, racial justice and also be for safe cities and having police to protect the most vulnerable people among us. I mean, that shouldn't be a zero-sum game. In fact, if you look at some of the most violent protesters, most of them are white and privileged. They're not the people who, you know, are representing the protest movements necessarily. So, you know, the people are unable to have any nuance in these conversations. If you look at the polling, there are a lot of African Americans that are worried about rising crime. It's not just a Republican issue. You heard, you know, Nikki Haley, I think, hit something of a sweet spot when talking about trying to find a balance between racial justice and also having safety and security in where you live. And look, I mean, look, Democrats should have had a pretty simple response to inoculate themselves from the criticism you're hearing this week at the Republican convention. You know, all they had to say was, like, Trump is as Jeb Bush called him, the chaos president, and he's fueling a lot of these problems, and you need to vote for Joe Biden, who's a more stable voice, someone who actually supports more policemen in the cities. I mean, that's generally what the Democrats have said that they stood for, but they were so scared of their own base, they're so scared of the progressive left wing, that they didn't even want to touch this issue, didn't even want to address it at their convention, and they've opened themselves up to a lot of criticism, and I think it's making a mark at the Republican convention.
I think so, too. Josh Krasnow, political editor for the National Journal, always great to have you back. We didn't even have time to talk baseball. We'll do that the next time. The Cardinals pretty good right now. I like when they lost last night, but I like what I'm seeing. I think they're going to round into form in September. We'll have plenty of time for that in the future. 2:30, I'm going to highlight some of the really, really interesting investigative piece in the Louisville Courier-Journal on Breonna Taylor. And it's an interesting, very detailed report, which shows that Breonna Taylor had a lot more ties than previously made public with an accused drug trafficker. Again, not doing this to justify the shooting, because I don't even like no-knock warrants. But it provides some context that is missing. There have been a lot of lies about that case that have been told. So we'll clear that up, hopefully, here in just a couple of minutes on KMOX. First, we got to get to the news. Alex is in for Carol this afternoon, then we're back with much more on KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Well, I know that I have conversations with people all around the country from time to time on Mike Brown and Ferguson, and I often have to explain the situation to them, because most people, and look, there's even people in the media in St. Louis that I am convinced have never read the Justice Department report, never read the grand jury. They don't know any of the details of what happened, and many people from around the country still buy the hands up, don't shoot narrative when it comes to Mike Brown. Completely false narrative, never happened. But, you know, I started thinking about Breonna Taylor in Louisville, and I didn't know a lot of the details of that. Her name is brought up quite a bit. Now, remember when this case happened, we talked about it a little bit. If you go, for example, to Wikipedia right now, it says Breonna Taylor, 26-year-old African-American emergency medical technician, was fatally shot by the Louisville Metropolitan Police Department officers, and they name all the officers. Three plainclothes officers executing a no-knock search warrant entered her apartment in Louisville, Kentucky. Gunfire was exchanged between Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, and the officers. Walker said that he believed that the officers were intruders. And by the way, I think that that's exactly what happened. They didn't know that they were cops. I've stated before, I'm not a no-knock search warrant guy, never have been against them for a long time as a libertarian. So I called my friend Joe Arnold in Louisville, who was a reporter, WHAS radio and television. You hear our mutual friend Scott Jennings on the show quite a bit. And I called him just a few days ago. Joe's with me this afternoon. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Mark.
And the question I said, look, give me a little, a little detail on Breonna Taylor that I might be missing. And we talked about it for a little while. And I said, maybe I'll have you on the show next week, being this week, to talk about it. And then there's an updated report that's in the Courier-Journal even today or this week that and I'm just going to read from the beginning because I think it's interesting. It says an internal report written by Louisville Metro police officers after they fatally shot Breonna Taylor sheds more light on the reasons why they chose to forcibly enter her South End apartment. It provides no explanations or evidence aimed at justifying the shooting that has sparked 3 months of protests in Louisville and national outrage, with critics accusing police of breaking into the home of an unarmed black woman for no legitimate reason and killing her. But the 39-page report and corroborating evidence do show that Taylor had more extensive ties than previously made public with an accused drug trafficker who was at the center of a larger narcotics investigation in Louisville. It's not known if the details included in the report were presented to the judge who signed the no-knock warrant. But they say the findings of the report and the reporters at the Courier-Journal, Joe, as you know this, corroborated jail phone recordings and other documents detailing links between Taylor and Jamarcus Glover of Louisville, the man that was the target in the drug probe. So they go on in this story. But what this provides, and I said this before the segment, Joe, I'm not trying to say that this is a horrific thing that happened to someone who should not have been shot dead in their bed. I think we can agree on that. But the reason I wanted to have you on, and the reason this report is so, I think, important, is because there is context that's missing here. Joe, as you know, you even told me this, there were all kinds and maybe even still rumors that the cops just completely went to the wrong apartment. They did not go to the wrong apartment, did they?
Right. That was, and there's a variety of people, and we both know, and you know, just by the folks who interact with the media, people leverage media attention and tragedy, unfortunately, for a number of agendas. And that's in every race, stripe, political party, whatever. People want to leverage the fact that people are paying attention to something, piggyback on that, and make it a larger issue. So what happens in the process is a real tragedy, like what happened here with Breonna Taylor. And that's the number one fact to repeat, is that she is dead, and that's a tragedy. But the problem is that sometimes the facts in these stories become secondary to the larger narrative. And I certainly think, as Breonna Taylor has become literally a meme, and, you know, there was actually an event here, a 4-day event that ended yesterday with some protests and arrests that they called Breonna Con. And it is almost like an industry, if you will, surrounding this case, which is, again, a tragedy at its heart. But the problem when you and I understand the folks who are most concerned about what happened here and want to get to the fact of it, is that ultimately the more you drill down to any one decision, it's difficult to reach the ultimate conclusion that the protesters and activists are asking for, which is in itself almost a meme, which was arrest the officers who killed Breonna Taylor. And that, yeah. And from all legal experts for the most part here are saying that's never going to happen. At least they're never going to be charged with the crime of murder.
Well, it's certainly not going to happen after the details of this report. So what you have in here, there's a tracking device that was placed on Jamarcus Glover's Dodge Charger. It was driven to Taylor's apartment 6 times in January. There's photographs of Glover entering and exiting Breonna Taylor's building. In the application for the warrant, police said they suspected drugs and money were being held. There's a phone call that took place where Glover tells a girlfriend that Taylor was holding $8,000 for him and had been handling all the money, which is interesting. They did not find money at the residence, and there really isn't clear evidence that that was the case. I mean, there's always a possibility that he says that on the phone, that Breonna Taylor's holding money and that she wasn't really doing that. That's why some of the facts are a little hard to determine just from what might have been said in a jailhouse phone call, because criminals tend to lie too, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing to bear in mind here, and I think this is unfortunate, first of all, I'll always defend the First Amendment. Reporters who, if I was reporting on this and I received the information and I knew it to be true, I would verify it, but I'd report it. But you also have to ask, as this case is still pending under investigation by both the state attorney general as well as by the FBI and the U.S. Justice Department, you know, what, again, like the first thing I said, everyone has an agenda in all these situations. So why was this information released now? And that's unfair. I think in the long run, it will this kind of early release or leak of selective information can actually do more harm than good to, if in fact the officers are, for lack of better words, exonerated, or there's another conclusion to this case than what most of the activists are looking for.
Jamarcus Glover was arrested on January 3rd. After that arrest, he called Breonna Taylor from jail and asked her to contact one of his co-defendants to get bail money. Taylor responded that person was already at the trap. I was unaware until reading this, and if I did know this, I'd forgotten it, that the trap means that's where they sell drugs. So that's the house where they sell drugs. Glover told her to be on standby to pick him up if he made bail. I'm going to get some rest in your bed. Love you, he said at the end of the call. Love you too, she replied. Now, the attorney for the family had at first, and he had to apologize to the Courier-Journal because he had mischaracterized that relationship as really being something that was non-existent, and now there's proof to corroborate that there was a, you know, a pretty close relationship there, and he apologized for that, which was interesting.
Right. Yeah, they were certainly still in touch, and this was a, and just to bear in mind, to your point, whether or not the judge should have issued a warrant in this case, whether or not the officers should have executed it, and in what way they did that is, you know, knocking or known or non-identifying themselves, no knock, whatever you want to say it. At the end of the day, the point was is that the department, the city, the judge all believe this was a legitimate investigation into drug trafficking with someone who was, you know, known a main target and a drug probe. And someone who was witnessed by police, as you said a moment ago, regularly visiting Taylor's apartment. And now there is one of the questions, though, and this goes back again to, you know, who's, how do you pin this on any one person as far as where the tragedy started? But in one report, a U.S. postal inspector reported or told police that that this DeMarcus Glover had received packages at Breonna Taylor's address. Later on, a different postal inspector said that's not true. So to a different media representative. So you just don't know exactly, you know, whether this search of her apartment, the search warrant that was being executed, was legitimate in the first place. But there certainly was a legitimate investigation going on. One thing you did say before, Mark, and it's reminded me of some of the things that I do hear, like that she was sleeping, and you said that, you said like shot dead in her bed. She actually, she and her boyfriend were in bed watching a movie, according to him. Both got out of bed when the banging started. So she was not even in the bedroom when she was shot, tragically shot to death. She was
right,
in the hallway.
Right.
But you'll hear that, you'll hear people saying, number one, they went to the wrong apartment.
Yeah, well, I did it. Right. I even you're right. She was in the hallway. In fact, you know, and I think there's plenty of evidence to bear out the fact that they didn't know it was the cops. OK. And the boyfriend, the other boyfriend who survived this, basically said if they would have, you know, he shot because he thought people were breaking in. And right. He was even quoted as saying, you know, I don't shoot at no cops. Now, whether or not that's true or not. But I do think that once they didn't identify themselves, then there was a shot fired, and then there were more shots fired. There was just, you know, gunfire at the OK Corral, and she was caught in the crossfire.
That's right. And that's, again, it's a tragedy. And but which mistake was the most egregious? Those officers were in the position to serve this warrant that was approved by the judge, and once they were executing it in the way that they were trained and told to do, and I'm not trying to say just following orders, but just bear with me here. Once a shot is fired at the officer, I'm asking the question, perhaps rhetorically,
right.
What
do you do?
What is it they're supposed to do in that situation? And so, of course, what happened, though, you might have heard about an officer who was fired. And it is Brett Hankinson, because there were three officers who opened fire. Two were basically inside the apartment. One was outside. The one who fired the shots outside the apartment is the one who
recklessly
was fired.
And
up to this point, we don't know yet whose bullets, Breonna Taylor was shot five times. But it would stand to reason the person who had who was the closest in proximity to her and shooting and returning fire in that hallway may have been, you know, one of the officers that actually struck her. But the person who was fired was not fired because he shot Breonna Taylor. He was fired because he was firing, wanton endangerment, basically through the screen door and shots that went through the wall and into the neighboring apartment. So I'm just saying, sometimes, again, I see things from other states or on Twitter, God forbid, or other places that say, oh, yeah, he was fired for killing her. Well, no, he was fired for this other situation, you know, there at the same apartment.
Yeah, there are a lot of details, and look, I'm very familiar with it from what happened in Ferguson, that people just will, even if they're presented with the facts, they will reject them. Joe, it's great to have you on. Glad you spent a little time with me here this afternoon on this, and I don't think it's going away. And hey, the Cardinals are playing pretty good baseball right now. You have to admit that. They're going to be fine, don't you think?
I am pleased, and I'm all for it. I have no.
They should have won last night too.
I'm not complaining at all whatsoever about your DH situation there.
Anti-DH Joe Arnold. Yeah, they should have won last night. I thought they were going to come back and win that one. They had a shot in the ninth. Thanks a lot, Joe. We'll talk soon. 249 at the Voice of St. Louis.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Repeating the fact that I don't know that necessarily changes some of the outrage about Breonna Taylor, but it also provides. Look, somebody texted me and said, so Breonna Taylor was a drug dealer. I don't think that the evidence shows that at all. In fact, I think that the evidence is very contradictive of that. She was not found with drugs. She didn't have drugs in her apartment. She didn't have the cash. It seems like she was at the very least, though, an administrative assistant, if you will, to Jamarcus Glover, because what was happening now, is there the possibility? I'd have to dig deeper into this particular report. Is the possibility there that she didn't know that he was using the apartment? Maybe, but she was pretty comfortable with using the slang for the drug house as well. So I don't know, because then anything I say is going to lead people to indicate that I think that somehow that her shooting and her death was warranted, which couldn't be further from the truth. I just think that in all these cases, let me give you an example. I told you yesterday, the cops involved in George Floyd's situation will not be found guilty. None of them, including Officer Chauvin. There is ample evidence that there were other things that contributed. I think what I saw Derek Chauvin do was outrageous. Don't think it should have happened. However, I'm not dealing with someone who's on fentanyl on a regular basis. I'm not dealing with someone who was having an episode in the car and wouldn't listen to the police officers. So these things are more nuanced than anyone ever wants to admit. Law enforcement knows this. They deal with it all the time. Second hour of the show coming up. We'll get an update, by the way, from Kenosha.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.